Thank you for coming. Glad you're all here. And my name is Michelle Simon, and I'm Research and Policy Director at Marin Institute, which is an alcohol industry watchdog group. But prior to that, I worked for many years on food policy. And I want to give a quick thank you to the Health Law SPIG for organizing this session. And if anyone needs a second or third section to join, I really encourage you to join the Health Law SPIG, because we're a growing SPIG that are just on the verge of becoming a full-fledged section. And so whatever your specialty is, you can add on Health Law, and we welcome lawyers and non-lawyers and certainly law students. So just some quick background. I want to get to our fantastic panel today. You know, when I started working on food policy in the late 1990s, it was very lonely as a lawyer. And there were certainly some folks in DC working on various aspects of food policy, but it really wasn't until the early 2000s that this issue started heating up. And now I'm happy to say I have, oh, that was easy, thank you. Just pushing a button, low tech. Okay, so I'm happy to say that there is now a full team of lawyers working on the obesity epidemic and on food policy in general, and we have a crackerjack team today to talk to you about various aspects of law and obesity. And so the way this is going to work, I'm going to introduce each of the speakers before their respective talks, and then we're going to hold questions to the end, because they each have so much to say, and we want to get to kind of a panel discussion, but certainly we encourage you to ask those questions after all four speakers have presented. And our first speaker is Mark Perchuk, who he said he didn't want a long introduction, but I'm just going to say he's a public health hero of mine and of a lot of us in the field. His work spans tobacco, gun control, alcohol, and is now leading this fantastic project on preemption. And I want to get the official name of it right. It's called Preemption and Movement Building in Public Health, and he is the project director at the Public Health Law Center with William Mitchell College of Law. So with that, I give you Mark Perchuk.
So what I'm going to talk about today, focus on, is the very big picture of preemption and what it does to public health across multiple public health issues. And not talk so much about the details of preemption, let alone a legal analysis of preemption. There are a lot of resources for that. I'm happy to talk about preemption for days on end if anybody wants to follow up with me. But also public health law and policy, the Rudd Center, Public Health Law Center, lots of resources, including people to talk to in person as well as fantastic web-based. But we're talking about the big picture, okay? Yeah. So for those who, how many people know what preemption is? How many people know a lot about what federal and state preemption are? Great, thank you. yes, I recognize you. So for those who may not know that much, preemption is simply when, by legislative or regulatory action, a higher level of government, the federal government by statute or regulation, takes away the power of a lower level over a given subject. And there are the authority of Congress and the federal regulatory agencies to preempt is essentially unlimited, and that's authorized to a significant extent by the Supremacy Clause in the U.S. Constitution, which you see there. State ability to preempt the authority of local agencies, local entities such as cities and counties, is also almost unlimited. There are some weeds that you can get into about that, but they're not significant for the purposes of the work of what I'm talking about today and the work that we're doing in our project looking at the big picture of preemption. And what is important is the concept of express preemption versus implied preemption. Express preemption, as you might imagine and may already know, occurs when there is explicit language, often in the form of a so-called preemption clause in a statute or in a regulation that says we preempt so and so, or we preempt this but not that. Implied preemption occurs when it's when preemption is not, according to a court that's reviewing it, explicitly addressed. So the court needs to put together from various sources whether or not it preempts and to what extent it preempts. And again, there are a lot of resources on this, including ones that we've done ourselves on our website. And we can perhaps talk a little bit about this later. The most significant thing for the purpose of our work is that preemption is essentially a universal issue. These are a small fraction of the issues in which preemption is an important issue. You're familiar with nutrition and tobacco, and 40 states preempt any local ordinances which address firearms violence, for example. But some of the less well-known are CAFOs, concentrated animal feeding operations. There's a preemption issue. There are preemption issues coming up, state preemption of local attempts to regulate CAFOs, even tanning facilities and local attempts to regulate youth access to tanning facilities. The issue is, if not universal, nearly universal. One of the starting points for the work that we're doing, the research that we're doing in this project, is tobacco control. And in tobacco control, opposition to federal and state preemption in any form is universally opposed by anyone who matters in the field, even people in Washington and the state capitals. And this is just a small example of that consensus. The first is a consensus document that sort of everybody has signed on to, never agree to preemption. The American Heart Association, which has addressed preemption so far in tobacco and in obesity prevention policy, this is a typical position for the voluntary health agencies, opposes federal preemption, opposes state preemption, and the American Medical Association, and so on. So, with the jumping off point that at least the consensus is done in tobacco control, we wanted to look at preemption as a universal issue, and to look at, that is to say, as an issue which is not specific to one issue, but is universal across public health and even health access and the quality of health care. And to do that, we've done a number of things, but one of them is to conduct a series of key informant interviews, 18 interviews, which were conducted between February and April of this year. And we had a national sample of key informants that were remarkably diverse in pretty much any way you can define diversity. In one metric of that diversity was that we had people, hardcore community organizers who had worked in a single community or several different communities over a 20 or 30 year period and had always done that work. They had always worked locally or possibly in a small regional area, often on multiple issues. And they were as far away from academia, for example, as you could be. But we also had academic researchers, a handful of academic researchers who have done some very important work on preemption and grassroots movement building. We had advocates, public health advocates working at the state or federal level. We had public officials and managers of public health systems. So and again, it was national. We covered every region of the country in our sample of 18, and the interviews were recorded. They were professionally transcribed, and we used the Excite Qualitative Research Service software to analyze the findings. And first of all, the key informants in our research covered, even conservatively, more than 25 public health issues. And I would say these are just a sample. These are a subset of the issues covered by our key informant research. And I would say it would be hard to find an issue that was not an issue that had been worked on, addressed, or researched by someone involved in our research. So what did we do with this? We asked questions in two broad categories that overlap. One is the impact of preemption on public health, again, looking at the big picture. And the second is the role of grassroots movement building in public health across public health issues. And we also, of course, looked at the juncture between those two. Does preemption impact the ability to build successful grassroots social movements in health, specifically, we looked at, and we looked at some specific issues, the role of industry in preemption, the secrecy versus transparency in negotiating preemption at the federal or state level, and we assessed various arguments in favor of preemption. So the first and most important finding on preemption was that all 18 key informants felt, from all of these issues, felt that preemption, federal and state preemption, have a negative impact on public health. They gave varying and overlapping reasons for this, but some of the reasons were it limits innovation, takes away the ability of communities to respond to arising or diverse needs, discourages civic engagement. So a broader issue encompasses public health of democracy and civic engagement, hands over control of public health to industry lobbyists at the federal or state level. It takes away the incentive for individuals to get involved in public health advocacy or public health policy. It takes away local voice. It undermines grassroots movement building, which I'll talk about in a little bit more detail. And then on a more, what might be a little bit more of a scholarly level, it undermines the federal vision in which states function as, and these are quotes from the key informant interviews, laboratories of experiment. So to give you a flavor of the verbatim comments of the key informants, these are typical. Preemption is antithetical to the basic tenet of public health, which is that the national policy sets a floor, not a ceiling. Preemption is usually important in almost every aspect of public health. It's universal, in part because industries are enormously creative and tireless in raising preemption arguments. And again, that it's a universal issue, that looking at two different issues, say CAFOs and nutrition policy, the issues raised by preemption are, for the most part, well, according to our research, they are the same. So the problems you have in one issue are not functionally different if you look at another issue. So as a big part of what we did, we wanted to look at the role of grassroots movement building in public health across issues. And as part of this, we actually defined, I actually have the definition over there, and I can read the definition that we've developed as a result of our research, but I'll do that later. But what we found is that grassroots movement building, in addition to the obvious benefits of creating power in public health, there were an array of benefits from grassroots movement building. Obviously, policy change, but citizen engagement, innovation, building capacity, or what I might call grassroots capacity, in public health. So there's two issues. The grassroots movements thrive if they're given, if their efforts to build their capacity, and they also give public health the capacity to make fundamental change. And also, perhaps most important, one of our findings is that grassroots movements are one of the few things that we know can actually achieve that goal of changing social norms. So that holy grail of changing social norms and then presumably permanently changing behaviors, as in the case of tobacco, it can be a function of grassroots movement building. And we found that preemption has, from our research, that preemption has a negative impact on grassroots movement building. Some of the reasons that the key informants gave for this, it takes away the ability of people to make local policy. By taking away the ability of people to make local policies, it takes the wind out of the sails of a public health campaign. This quote is one of my favorites. One of the biggest detriments to building a grassroots movement is people saying, there isn't anything we can do about that. Like, you know, you talk to people in a community and you say, hey, we need to do something about obesity. And they say, you know, there's nothing we can do about that. The problem is just too big. And this key informant said, so if the government has actually said, you're right, you can't do anything about this, then I'm much less likely, this was someone who obviously was an advocate and organizer, much less likely to be able to move them to action. So oftentimes in public health, industry has a little bit more clarity about what's going on with public health than we do. So we can learn a lot from industry. And I think this is true, again, almost universally. It's not just the tobacco industry, which is a terribly obvious example. This is a presentation given by the National Restaurant Association at a convening of the Georgia Restaurant Association in June, following the passage of federal preemption menu labeling, which many of you are probably familiar with. And so in her presentation, the presenter gave this. So she's got the nice fading in, which I wanted to do for the rest of mine, but I have to figure out it. And so this is, according to the National Restaurant Association, this is what was happening in December of 2006. And she was explaining why it was so exciting that menu labeling had passed. So she said, well, in May of 2010, there's this fantastic grassroots movement. Look at this. And so look what we've achieved. This is, and obviously these are the slides taken from the National Restaurant Association presentation. So this was one possibility, the Carper bill, the Harkin bill. And I'm not in obesity policy, so this is, I'm looking at this from a distance. So this is what was passed, the new law here. It preemption. I didn't know it has liability protections because I'm not working on that. I should probably know that. So that's the good news for the Restaurant Association. And so it's not so much that industry is bad or that every time the industry says we want something, that means it should be opposed. It's that a savvy and sophisticated public health campaign should be aware of what the industry is doing and thinking, ideally, like the day they make that decision. Because otherwise, you may be behind the eight ball. And so our research confirmed this. According to our research, this is a typical quote, preemption is a tool of an industry. And so you need that analysis in order to address preemption adequately. This is, in tobacco control, we have access to, in the internal thinking of the industry, at the peak of the grassroots successes, the industry says we need to make sure that businesses like restaurants know that statewide uniformity will benefit them and eliminate the threat of local legislation. We did test, very briefly, arguments that have been made in favor of federal or state preemption and found that those arguments were not, according to our research, those were not arguments that were beneficial, that represented benefits to public health. That they were, yes, an industry argument, we need uniformity, but why does public health need uniformity? Equity has been less often made as an argument for preemption. It's a misuse sort of the word equity. In fact, unfairness is caused. Unfairness is caused by the taking away the ability of my community to protect its health, my diverse and unique community. That's inequity. And finally, on secrecy versus transparency, first of all, 14 of the 18 key informants in our research were personally aware of preemption being negotiated in secret. What's significant about that is that our key informants represented more than 25 public health issues. So it wasn't just that it was 14 people who work in tobacco control or 14 people who work in obesity prevention. It was 14 people who work in probably more than 20 different public health issues. But all of the key informants were of the view that secrecy in negotiating preemption was a negative for public health. This last quote, I love this last quote. I actually believe, of course, these interviews were anonymous and confidential, but I believe this last quote may have been the same person. The downside of secrecy is that there's two people in the room from your side, from the public health side, and there's 10 people in the room from the other side. And who are those people, the public health people, representing? It's not representative. Usually there's some sort of quid pro quo happening, and then generally in my experience, the quid or the pro is never worth what you're signing away. And again, this is a person, it doesn't violate anybody's confidence to say, this is not a person working in any of the big public health issues like tobacco that many of us have worked in. It's someone who's worked in an issue which is in public health, but is it's not, for example, nutrition policy or something like that. And that's the end. How'd I do?
Perfect. You're good.
Thank you so much. And I want to thank you all for coming on this last early morning, last day. And it's really nice to have all of you here.